Greetings once again, America. My name's Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the World View. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview. We're back on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And, you know, I go on the road for a few weeks, and I get back here, and Egypt's in chaos, Charlie Sheen's back in rehab, Lindsay Lohan's shoplifting again, and Focus on the Family is crawling into bed with Planned Parenthood. You know, you people have got to take better care of things, or I'll start to think that I can never take any time off. It's quite disturbing. You know what? I'm not even sure I can get myself motivated to do the broadcast. You know, actually, we've got a tour de force. We're probably going to go a little bit long today. Probably just a little bit long, but that's the beauty of the podcast. You can download it, you can pause it, and you can listen to it at your leisure. So if we do go a little bit long, please forgive me, but I've got a lot of news because I'm playing a little bit of catch up, and I'm sorry, but I just need something. Thank you, Eddie. Thank you, Sammy. All right. So I'm driving along with my 9-year-old the other day, and I am playing a guitar solo on the steering wheel. And she asked me, "Daddy, who taught you how to play guitar?" And I said, "Well, nobody really ever taught me how to play guitar. In fact, I'm a lot better on the steering wheel than I am on a real guitar." And I expected her to laugh, but she didn't laugh. She looked at me a little bit askew, and she said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, on the steering wheel, I never miss a note. Have you noticed?" Anyway, all right, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. All right. Now, I'm not sure where to start. I think I'm going to start with Egypt because it seems to be the big news of the day. What I found fascinating about this whole Egyptian situation is that the liberals, they say that Egypt is a beautiful democratic revolution and they're all celebrating. The neocons, they say that this might have, you know, they're stuck. They've got to say that this might be George W. Bush's wave of freedom and democracy sweeping across the Middle East. And then, of course, any Republican who's been in government, and Democrat, frankly, who's been in government for the past 30 years, they're trapped. They've got to nominally at least defend Mubarak. It's been fun to watch. You know, it further convinces me, folks, that it's the Christians who have the answers. Not the liberals, not the neocons, not the Republicans, not the Democrats, not Ron Paul, not the Tea Party. It's the Christians. And darn few of them have the answer, folks. But you're fortunate in tuning into one that does. And I'm not afraid to stand up and say, oh, by the way, I've got two predictions to make off the top relating back to this Egyptian revolution. My first prediction: Anderson Cooper of CNN fame. I know many of you probably don't know who he is, but I believe that Anderson Cooper may very soon marry Khalid Abdulli, who is, I know nobody knows who Khalid Abdulli is, but you're going to know, because Anderson Cooper, I believe, is going to marry the guy. You should have seen them. They were practically making googly eyes at each other on the television the other night. It was disturbing to watch. Disturbing. So that's my bold prediction for 2011, that Anderson Cooper will appear on the steps of some liberal cities, the steps of their courthouse with Khalid Abdulli, who he'll import from Egypt. And Anderson Cooper will finally tie the knot and settle down. By the way, Khalid Abdulli is a boy, just in case you weren't sure. But I'm sure when I mentioned Anderson Cooper was going to get married, everyone assumed that it was a boy. But anyways. Also, this is way off the subject, but it's something that I've taken note of. And I don't necessarily want your opinion on it. I want to let you know my opinion. I think that Michael Jackson's kids are actually Marlon Brando's grandkids. I just noticed this distinct similarity between the Brando kid who was hanging out with Michael there toward the end and Michael's kids. I'm probably not the first person to point this out. It seems fairly obvious to me. And why do I mention it? I don't know. I have it here in my notes. I thought it was interesting. What was the kid's name? Marlon Brando's... Miko Brando? Miko? I don't know the guy's name, but anyway, I think that all of Michael Jackson's kids are in fact the Brando guy's kids. What does that mean? Well, it doesn't mean anything. I don't even know why I bring it up. Let's see here. All right, should we get to the news? I mentioned Lindsay Lohan, and I mentioned Charlie Sheen. Probably won't mention them again, but I did want to get that out there, that I'm concerned. I'm concerned about Charlie's hernia, and also concerned about Lindsay's penchant for shoplifting. What's up with that? Is she that short on dough, or is she that hooked on heroin? Anyway, it's bizarre. Focus on the Family, crawling into bed with Planned Parenthood? Yeah. In fact, I suppose we should start there. Probably the biggest story of the week. Anyway, from the Denver Post, I got to thank my other brother, Daryl, for pointing this out to me, because I can tell you, I haven't read a paper newspaper in a number of years. But he pointed out to me, he said, "Have you seen the front page of yesterday's Denver Post?" And I said, "No, but it is laying on the floor of my garage as we speak." He said, "You might want to look at it." So here we go. Focus on the Family. It's from the Denver Post Saturday. This Saturday past. Focus on the Family President Jim Daly, who, by the way, is an MBA. I'm not sure if he has any formal religious training. Not that religious training is necessary. I'm not sure he has any formal religious beliefs. Anyway, he says he's asking abortion rights advocates to work with Focus on the Family to make abortion less common. That's right, he's extending an olive branch to Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. And they've accepted. They say they're willing to talk, according to the Post. Where are we? Oh, reproductive rights supporters say they want abortion. Oh, I'm sorry, Daly says reproductive rights supporters say they want abortion to be legal, safe, and rare. And so Focus on the Family will try to walk that common ground with them in lessening demand for abortion. The newspaper says it's bound to engender controversy about whether detente between Focus on the Family and Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains advances or hinders Daly's ultimate goal of making abortion illegal. Well, first of all, I'm not sure where the Denver Post ever got the idea that Jim Daly wants to make abortion illegal. He's had the opportunity to support personhood for the last 4 years here in Denver, and he's been oddly absent from the debate. The paper says that Daly will no doubt take some heat for this decision. Boy, that's putting it mildly. He may, in fact, take some serious heat in the hereafter. But the Post does say that this move is in keeping with Daly's makeover of the house that James Dobson built. Jim Dobson must be spinning in his grave. What's that? He's not dead? Oh, I apologize. Apparently, Jim Dobson is still alive, although he's hard to find these days. Anyway, so Focus on the Family, extending an olive branch to Planned Parenthood, is like the French offering an olive branch to the Germans as they're marching through the Arc de Triomphe. Mr. Daly, you've already lost. You've already been defeated and buried by Planned Parenthood. And so I'm not sure I see the wisdom in this, but perhaps Mr. Daly, being an MBA, he may be a lot smarter than I give him credit for. And perhaps he's got a crafty, subtle, and cunning plan to trick Planned Parenthood. And, you know, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Well, actually, no, I can't. Mr. Daly, I'm thoroughly unimpressed. I'm as unimpressed here as when I asked Mr. Daly to sign a petition stating that every unborn child should be recognized as a legal person. Well, that would have prevented some abortions had that passed. Mr. Daly did not sign it, though. He handed it back to me and he said, I have to talk to my staff. Anyway, so there you have it. My, things have gone crazy since I left town. I'll tell you what. All right. Now, I got a lot of news, and we're going to get to it here. Let's start out. We're going to start out a Reuters story. This is out of Silver Springs, Maryland. Oh, I'm sorry, Silver Springs, Florida. Man, you'd think with 3 weeks to prepare for the show that I'd have my notes in order. Anyway, you'll have to forgive me. I must be a little rusty. Silver Springs, Florida. The cremated remains of a man and two dogs were stolen from a woman's home in the central Florida town of Silver Springs way back on December 15th, along with electronic equipment and jewelry. Well, investigators have arrested five teenagers in connection with another burglary attempt at a nearby home earlier this month. And apparently after interviewing these young burglars, authorities say the suspects mistook the ashes. You remember I said they took the cremated remains of a man and two dogs? Well, they mistook the ashes for either cocaine and heroin, and the suspects apparently snorted some of the ashes, believing they were snorting some kind of drug. So, I mean, burglary is a serious crime. And criminals are generally poor problem solvers, and they're not all that bright. But that being said, that's pretty embarrassing for even a low-life burglar, scumbag, okay? I mean, that's just sad. Let's see here. No report on whether or not these young burglars have been caned. Apparently, they have not. But we will not follow up on that story, I can assure you of that. All right. Now let's move to more serious news. The domestic tranquility file from Medford, Massachusetts. This is from CBS. A woman was ordered held without bail last Monday, charged with killing her husband in Medford, Massachusetts. Troy Burston, the husband in this case, was wounded outside a home in Medford. He was rushed to the hospital where he later died. Police have arrested his wife, 39-year-old Shantina Burston. Investigators say she allegedly found a hickey on his neck and stabbed him to death with a cooking knife. Over a hickey.
Yay. No,
oh. Apparently he gets the thumbs up from my extremely attractive audio engineer. Have I told you lately how extremely attractive you are? A hickey on his neck. That reminds me when I was sitting in a bar in New York City and the Lacey Peterson case was on the TV. And the folks at the bar were wondering about the motive, a couple of people, with two or three drinks in. You know, it's late in the evening. And they're just chit-chatting about what could the motive be for Scott Peterson to kill Lacey? And I set down my drink and I said, do you think it might be adultery? And they looked at me, and they kind of snickered and laughed. They were like, Anyway, happens all the time, folks. So she found a hickey, and, well, there you have it. That's a state of domestic tranquility in Medford, Massachusetts. Now, should we go to the politics file already? Already? Or should I go to my handwritten notes? No, I'll stick with the news. Apparently, Barry Ho has decided to take a distinctively religious theme into the 2012 campaign. Obama according to the Washington Examiner, he went deeply devout for last week's national prayer breakfast, telling attendees the role daily prayer plays in his life. Yes, daily prayer. I think he probably prays five times a day. Isn't that how they do it? In that old familiar bottoms-up position there to Allah? No, I don't want to imply that that Obama's a... But by the way, speaking of that, Bill Maher said something I completely agree with, which is rare. He said he doesn't buy the fact that Barry Ho's a Christian. He thinks he called him a secular humanist. Yeah, so I don't know if Bill's listened to the show or if he's just coming to his senses or if, you know, he's just not easily fooled. And I don't like Bill Maher. I knew the day I sat across from him in a TV studio that this pasty-faced heathen was a threat to everything good about America and the world. And so I don't give Bill Maher credit lightly, but I will credit him in this case of being able to point out the glaringly obvious. Congratulations, Bill. Now back to Barry Ho. He says daily prayer plays an important part in his life. He says, quote, "When I wake up in the morning, I wait on the Lord, and I ask him to give me the strength to do right by our country and its people. And when I go to bed at night, I wait on the Lord, and I ask him to forgive me my sins, and to look after my family and the American people, and make me an instrument of his will. Allahu Akbar, peace to you in the name of Allah, the most munificent." So that last part was a little garbled. I'm going based on, you know, what I... Anyway, the Washington Examiner says that Obama's religious rhetoric coincides with the unofficial start of the presidential campaign season, conveniently enough. And, well, talk about pointing out the glaringly obvious. I mean, Barry Ho's a secular humanist. Me and Bill Maher can hold hands and sing Kumbaya based on that right there. All right, now, let's go to the culture file. This is from Sydney, Australia. The Atheist Foundation of Australia has begun a campaign calling on the godless to mark the no religion box on the census. See, they're doing the census in Australia this year because everything in Australia is just a little bit off. So they're doing their census this year, and there's apparently a checkbox for your religion. You can check Catholic, Protestant, or no religion. And the heathens are putting up billboards all over Australia. They're going to have a month-long display of billboards encouraging the godless to mark no religion. And they say they're doing this to counter the extent to which Australia was unduly claimed as a Christian country in decision-making and funding. Malcolm Williams, who's the director of Outreach Media, a Sydney-based Christian media organization, he doesn't think Christians would be too bothered by the atheist campaign. Yeah, I've noticed this, that Christians are generally not too bothered by whatever the heathens do. Generally doesn't bother us too much, because they're just a bunch of filthy, unwashed, ignorant heathens, and what do you expect them to say? And what do you expect them to do? That's what they are. But boy, any mention of Jesus Christ, God, salvation, heaven or hell, and these people go crazy. They seem to be obsessed with no religion. So they're obsessed with a negative, which is bizarre. And it helps me feel comfortable in the feeling that I am indeed right. All right, we better not let the breaks go too long here. I know, I like listening to the music too. But we've got serious business here, folks. The heathens are rearing their ugly heads. And by golly, I am one white Christian American who's not going to let it go by without at least some commentary making fun of them and pointing out how stupid and ignorant they are. And I wish them all the best. I wish they would come to a knowledge of the Creator God, the living God who created the universe and who will ultimately judge their souls and the fate of their of the destiny of their eternal souls. I wish they would. But along the way, if they're going to act stupid, then I'm going to make fun of them. All right. Now, let's go back to the politics file. Columbia, South Carolina. This is from the AP Wire. An African-American lawmaker in South Carolina said last Tuesday that stricter illegal immigration laws would hurt the state because blacks and whites don't work as hard as Hispanics. So here's a politician. He's an African-American. He's a state senator. His name is Robert Ford. He made his remarks during a Senate committee debate over immigration reform. And his comment, according to the AP, his comment elicited a smattering of nervous laughter in the chamber after he said, "Brothers don't work as hard as Mexicans." And he continued and he said, "Blue-eyed brothers don't either." He said, now this is a black fellow, okay? He's an African American, which means he's not from Africa. He's actually an American and he's black, but for whatever reason we don't like to use that term anymore. He's colored or black or any of that. Anyway, he said, once his ancestors were freed from slavery, he said, they didn't want to do any more hard work, so they were replaced by Chinese and Japanese. He recalled to the senators that four workers in the country illegally showed up on his lawn and finished mowing, edging, and other work in under a half an hour, work that he claims would take others, white people or black people, much longer, and the Mexicans only wanted $10 for the job. And he went on to say that he recommended these yard workers to his neighbors. Anyway, I just, when you point out the glaringly obvious, things that are generally known to be true but are simply not spoken of, and you're a politician, and you live in a world that is built upon lies, covered by lies, obfuscated by lies, mixed up with lies and twisted truths and half-truths, when you stand up and face and state the truth, there's a good chance you're going to lose your job. Anyway, the executive director of the state Republican Party has called on Ford to apologize. He says, it's abhorrent, it's incredibly offensive that any elected official would make comments this racist. That's the GOP shill, Joel Sawyer down there. Let's see here. Ford, who ran unsuccessfully for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination last year, said he'd apologize, but he doesn't know what for or what it would change. And he reiterated that throughout the generations, when one immigrant group becomes, quote, Americanized, unquote, they stop working hard. Well, I mean, have you looked at what it is that a 16, 17-year-old white high school student does during the summer and in his time off? He's not out there picking cotton or hoeing the fields, my friends. He's not out there pumping gas. Well, nobody's out there pumping gas anymore, except in Oregon. But the guy's got a good point. I mean, it's all fairly obvious to anyone who's paying attention. When you want hard work done, you call on the Mexicans. They know how to do it, and they do it quickly, and they do it for a reasonable price. And I wish that opportunity were made available to young white kids, and black kids, for that matter, all of us. I mean, young men need hard work to do. Idle hands are the devil's workshop. I know it's a cliche, but it's generally accepted to be obviously true. But in America, we've let in the illegals to do all the hard work. And so our young kids, they're sitting around smoking salvia and watching MTV, and the Mexicans are doing all the hard work. And those of us who are paying attention, like myself and Senator Ford, we happen to notice it and point out that it's generally true. And it's a sad state of affairs, don't get me wrong, because white kids and black kids, they could work as hard as Mexicans, but they need leadership, they need adult supervision, which is sorely lacking in this country these days. All right. Oh, we have anything else from this story? The state NAACP leader called Ford's wording unfortunate, but was apparently too lazy to call on the senator to apologize or resign. All right. I know, that was a bit over the top, but you know what? I'm in that kind of mood today. I haven't done this in a while, and so I'm a little bit giddy. You'll have to forgive me if I offend anyone out there. I certainly don't apologize in any way, and I refuse to step down. All right, now let's start our coverage of the Middle East. Anderson Cooper's impending marriage aside, let's start our coverage of the Middle East with some good news. Okay, this is from Moscow. An unnamed woman who was thought to be part of the same group that struck Moscow's Domodedovo, well, I can't even pronounce the name of this airport, Domodedovo airport. That sounds almost Japanese. Domodedovo? It's the Moscow. Oh, okay. So this woman, she's thought to be a part of the same terrorist group that bombed Moscow's airport a couple of weeks ago. She intended to detonate a suicide belt near Red Square on New Year's Eve in an attack that could have killed hundreds of people. Islamist terrorists, now in Russia, they often use mobile phones to detonate their explosives. Well, security sources believe a text message from her mobile phone company wishing her a happy new year was received just hours before she planned the attack. It triggered her suicide belt and blew her up in a safe house. Hi, this is Verizon. Happy New Year. That's just great. What great news. Anyway, that's pretty much the only good news out of the Middle East this week. So I'm glad to have been able to bring that to you. Now hunker down for the bad news. This is from the Daily Mail in London. Saeed Jaziri, who called for the death of a Danish cartoonist that drew pictures of the Prophet Muhammad, was caught being smuggled into California. He was arrested along with a driver. Yeah, he's a 43-year-old Islamist jihadist. He had been deported from Canada to his homeland of Tunisia back in 2007. And apparently he told officials he had flown from Africa to Europe, then to Central America, then to Chetumal, Mexico, on the Mexico-Belize border, where he took a bus to Tijuana and he was being smuggled into the United States, and somehow the border guards caught him. I mean, tell me that Barry Ho is not the luckiest president in the history of the presidency, at least as far as attacks on the United States go. I mean, they can't find people smuggling tons of cocaine and marijuana across the border every day, and somehow they catch this jihadist. I'll bet you there was some Israeli intelligence involved here. I don't see how else this guy could have got caught. Remember when I smuggled you across the border? Have I ever told this story on the air? Do you think that we could get arrested or deported for this story?
I don't know.
So anyway, my wife and I, we got married, and we went down to Mexico for some reason. Can't recall. Went down to Mexico. We were living in San Diego at the time. And when we were coming back across the border, they told her that her green card had expired. Her travel visa had expired. I said, oh, well, that's okay. We're married. They said, okay, do you have your documents? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, no, I don't. And they said, well, you can come across. You're a citizen, but she has to stay in Tijuana. And I said, well, she can't stay in Tijuana. That's insane. But they were serious. And so I turned the car around. I drove a few blocks away out of the view of the border guards. And I said, sweetheart, get in the trunk. And she thought I was crazy.
No.
No, you didn't think I was crazy?
No, I was.
She wanted to get back into San Diego no matter what. She would have gotten in the wheel well of a 747. Anyway, I put her in the trunk and drove back across the border less than 15 minutes later, past the glazed-eyed border guards, allegedly. And, snuck back in. And then I had to smuggle her back a few days later and come back and act like we were showing in the paperwork and going through everything legally. So that's my brush with the Border Patrol, smuggled my wife across in the trunk of a... What was that car we had? A Daihatsu. A Daihatsu Charade, oddly enough. A charade. Anyway, so it's amazing that they caught this jihadist. I'm glad they did, but unfortunately, he's probably already been released. All right. Now, let's get back to the Middle East and serious news. Let's see here. This is from Bangladesh. Not really the Middle East, but anywhere where the Muslims have spread their godless pagan religion, I consider that all the Middle East. This is from Bangladesh. A 14-year-old girl was raped by her 40-year-old relative, Mahbub, last Sunday. The next day, a fatwa was issued by local Muslim clerics, announced at a village arbitration that she must be given 100 lashes with a whip. She fell unconscious after nearly 80 lashes. She was rushed to the hospital where she died of her injuries. And the secular high court there in Bangladesh is apparently somewhat embarrassed at the authority of the Sharia Council. They have demanded punitive action against those who enforce the fatwa concerning this young rape victim. And so I read this story, and it just didn't make sense. She was raped, and now she's being whipped. And there's no mention of what happened to the rapist. Did you hear anything about what they might have done to the man who violated this woman? No. No. Because he was obviously seduced by her, apparently, in the eyes of the Sharia Council. And, of course, she had to be whipped. Bad religion, folks. Bad religion. In fact, on day one of the current Egyptian unpleasantness, my 9-year-old daughter happened to walk in the room while I'm watching the news, which I try to never let that happen. Because you can't watch the news with your kids these days. I mean, it's borderline pornographic, half the news. But since she was only seeing riots in the streets, I didn't change the channel. And she asked me, "What's happening, Daddy?" I said, "You know what, Nicole? What's happening there is bad religion and bad government. You've got Muslim government, authoritarian Muslim government, where the older men, they keep all the money and all the women, and they enslave the younger men. And after a certain amount of time, the younger men eventually rise up and rebel against the older men, at which point another group of even more evil, more powerful, more wicked and devious and cruel older men will re-enslave these younger men, and the whole cycle will repeat itself generation after generation. It's bad religion and bad government. That's what's going on over there in Egypt. And I'll have more to say about that. Well, actually, let's continue in the war file. From the Telegraph in London, they say that the American government secretly backed leading figures behind the Egyptian uprising who've been planning regime change for the past 3 years. The American embassy in Cairo, according to the Telegraph, helped a young dissident attend a U.S.-sponsored summit for activists in New York while working to keep his identity secret from Egyptian state police. On his return to Cairo in December of 08, the activist told U.S. diplomats that an alliance of opposition groups had drawn up plans to overthrow Hosni Mubarak and install a democratic government in 2011. So apparently this kid had a pretty good plan, and the United States government and operatives from therein did a good job of preparing this whole thing. I always thought it was weird how the very first couple of days of this thing, the first thing Obama said was, "Hosni, you got to go. You got to step down. There needs to be a transition." And I remember back to Iran this past summer, and I don't remember hearing anything out of Barry Ho's mouth for a week or two. And even then, it was pretty milquetoast, saying that, well, the people have a right to speak, and the Iranian people are wonderful and great, but far be it from me to entangle myself in the affairs of a foreign government. Oh, whatever, anyway. But boy, he was all over this. He was throwing Hosni under the bus, before it was even in gear. And apparently he's been working with these people, whoever it is behind this uprising. Apparently Barry and a lot of his friends have been involved. The disclosures, by the way, according to the Telegraph, are contained in secret U.S. diplomatic dispatches released by our good friends over there at WikiLeaks. So it all comes out, right? It all comes out. Should I get on the Muslim Brotherhood? Let's do that after the break. Won't you live, sing along? Won't you come to build a fire? Start a new Worldview. My name is Doug McBurney. I am your host. And we are deep in the war file as we slog through the cesspool that is the Middle East. Let's talk about the Muslim Brotherhood. First of all, I'm a little annoyed that they spell their name with a U, M-U-S-L-I-M. That's not right. It's Muslim, M-O-S-L-E-M. I'm just, hey, I respect the King's English, and I just read one of Churchill's books, and he calls them Muslims, and I respect Winston Churchill quite a bit when it comes to dealing with tyrants, dictators, and madmen. So I'm going to go with Muslim. Maybe I'll send a letter to the Brotherhood, see if I can get them to change their spelling of their name in English. All right. Anyway, a 1995 book by the movement's fifth official leader was titled Jihad is the Way by Mustafa Mashur. He headed the Muslim... did I say Muslim? See, it's because of the way they spell it. It throws me off every time. He headed the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt from 1996 to 2002. And in the book, he says, quote, "The Islamic Ummah is the most exalted nation among men as the leaders of humanity." Elsewhere, the book exhorts Muslims to, quote, "know your status and believe firmly that you are the masters of the world, even if your enemies desire your degradation," unquote. That's from Mustafa Mashur, a recent head of the Muslim Brotherhood. Oddly enough, they're in Egypt. So what's the takeaway here? Well, the Muslim Brotherhood, they know that God matters. They know that religion matters. And they're serious about their God. They're serious about their religion. And I've listened to the so-called conservative radio, television, conservative media, talk about this battle that's coming or that's occurring. That it's a battle of democracy and the free market against Islamists, Islamic socialism. And that's what they believe. That's what the conservatives believe here in America. And I'm here to tell you that this is why the Muslims will win. If we don't get our heads around the truth. This is not a battle of capitalism versus, I mean, you pick the ideology. Capitalism versus radical Islam. Capitalism versus communism. Free markets versus socialism. That's not what any of this is about. This is a battle between two religious worldviews. And in the end, for those of us in the know, this is a battle between Jesus Christ and the wicked. And it's up to us, the body of Jesus Christ on earth, to take up the battle in his name against all these enemies, the communists, the radical Islamists, the socialists, the anarchists, all of them. They all fit in one basket. They're wicked. They hate God. I heard the likes of Donald Rumsfeld on Rush Limbaugh this week, who came so close to the answer, but it eluded him because he's not wise. He talked about this. We have to be able to answer the cry from the Middle East for freedom. Well, what are we going to answer that with, Mr. Rumsfeld? He apparently thinks we're going to answer that yearning for freedom. We're going to answer that with free market capitalism and democracy. Well, Mr. Rumsfeld, I beg to differ. Free market economics and democracy are not going to save Egypt from what likely is going to be a period of considerable darkness. Only Jesus Christ, Christianity, you see, can enlighten the Middle East. Christianity will break down the wall of division between the Arab and the Jew. Only Jesus Christ will do that. And if we in America, the last great hope for Christianity on earth, if our leadership will not stand up and recognize that this is a religious battle and that we had better pick a side, well, they're going to be forced to pick a side because there's going to be a scimitar hanging over the back of their neck when they convert to Islam. Mr. Rumsfeld. That would be a fairly embarrassing position to find yourself in, would it not? But that's where we're headed, ladies and gentlemen, because our alleged leadership simply do not recognize the parameters of the conflict. But fortunately, the Christians have the answers, but darn few of the Christians have the answers, and you should consider yourself lucky to be listening to this broadcast. All right, now, speaking of Islamists, let's go to Egypt. This is from the Israel National News. News of an Islamist massacre of two Christian Coptic families has emerged from Upper Egypt with the return of internet connections to the country this past week. According to the report, the Islamist murderers, aided by Muslim neighbors of the Coptic Christians, stormed the homes of the families, gaining access to the houses, roofs. From the roofs of the Muslim neighbors, they killed 11 Christians, including children, and seriously injured four others. Anba Agathon, a local Christian bishop, told Coptic activist Dr. Mona Roman in a televised interview that the killers are neighbors of the Coptic Christians. And these Muslims, quote, seized the opportunity of the mayhem prevailing in Egypt and the absence of police protection to slaughter the Copts. In addition, they looted everything that was in the two Coptic houses, including money, furniture, and electrical equipment. They also looted livestock and grain. The bishop says that the massacre has nothing to do with the mayhem in Egypt, but the murderers took advantage of the lack of police protection and thought they could commit their crime and no one would notice. He says, why have these Islamists chosen those two Coptic families and not Muslim ones to slaughter and rob? I believe it is because they know that with cops, they can literally get away with murder. And apparently they have. And I think this is a microcosm for what we will see occur in Egypt over the next month or two before the Muslim Brotherhood finally takes over. We'll see an awful lot of Christians slaughtered. And Don Rumsfeld and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck will all hold out Thomas Jefferson, democracy, and free markets, while the Christians are butchered by their Muslim neighbors, and American leadership descends into virtual irrelevance in the cultural battle that is shaking the world. One more from the politics file relating back to these Muslims. The Ivory Coast is facing the forced Islamist takeover of its government, a move being pushed by the United States and the United Nations. Laurent Gbagbo, there was an election. The standoff has placed the country on the brink of war as the U.S. and other Western countries seek to force the installment of Alassane Ouattara, a Muslim, instead of Laurent Gbagbo, a Christian, who allegedly won an election. Gbagbo claims the presidency following the recent election, and he's the Christian. And so naturally, the United States and the United Nations is lobbying for the Muslim. The Constitutional Council of the Ivory Coast had determined that there was sufficient evidence of vote rigging in the northern part of the country controlled by the Muslims, that Gbagbo, the incumbent president, had won the election last November. Well, they said there was just too much corruption to determine whether or not Gbagbo had won. And so naturally they want to put the Muslim in there. Now, anyone in their right mind who understands that this is a battle of Christianity versus the wicked, even if there was vote rigging, and even if you had to lie and steal to install a Christian, you would install a Christian no matter what. And by the way, that's the only hope for Egypt. That, you know what I've been praying? Since this unpleasantness erupted, I've been praying for God to call his son out of Egypt. I've been praying, Lord, call your son out of Egypt and give his body the strength to overcome and to be victorious in this battle, because that is the only thing that's going to prevent, well, this unpleasantness is going to get considerably more unpleasant for all of us should the Muslims take over. All right. This article goes on to talk about how Obama helped to install Odinga in Kenya, and who, by the way, is a Muslim. Anyway, so we're not going to get any help from the President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen. And I know that Glenn Beck wants you to rely on yourself and follow your heart, but I will cast my lot with the body of Christ. The heat and the dust. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. We're back. And the show's definitely going to go a little bit long, so you'll have to bear with me. I will go as quickly as possible without skipping over any of the important parts. Okay? More on the Muslims, for crying out loud. How long does this go on? Oh, this is depressing. All right, here we go. This is from about 10 days ago. The United States, according to the AP, is acknowledging that that the hardline Muslim Brotherhood may play a role in Egypt's transition from autocracy if it agrees to a peaceful democratic process. State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley says the U.S. isn't dictating Egypt's shift. He says it's up to Egyptians to determine the process. He called on the Muslim Brotherhood to respect the democratic process. He acknowledged that the hardline Islamist movement is, quote, a fact of life in Egypt, unquote. So instead of aligning ourselves with anyone in the military there in Egypt who would crush, kill, and destroy all Muslim fundamentalist extremist Muslims, we're going to align ourselves with the Muslim Brotherhood. Why? Because our leadership worships democracy over right or wrong. They worship democracy over killing the wicked who want to destroy your country, enslave your women and children, and chop off your head. Democracy is more important to them. And they just don't get it. And it's just sad. I hate talking about the Muslims so much, but you know, it's in the news. And you all know how I feel, that it is indeed the secular humanists who are a much bigger threat on a day-to-day basis to your family, to your wife, to your children, to your marriage, to your health. It's the secular humanists who are the greatest threat. But one of the ways they are a threat is that they don't understand that the Muslims are a threat, and it seems like they're even willing to work with the Muslims to further enshrine democracy as a religion. And I'm sorry, I don't buy it. If the majority of the people want to do something wicked, they should be stopped, even if they win the election. Someone who's smarter and has the answer should come in and save these morons from themselves. Instead of being a Pied Piper leading the world into a thousand years of darkness because it meets their democratic expectations. And finally, the final word on this, and probably the most astonishing, Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, I know you've all heard this, but bear with me, because like I say, you may have heard the news, but stand by for this. He says, James Clapper, he says, the term Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella term for a variety of movements. In the case of Egypt, it's a very heterogeneous group, largely secular, which has eschewed violence and has decried Al-Qaeda as a perversion of Islam. Okay, so we all live through the shock of hearing our Director of National Intelligence utter those words in front of God and everybody with a straight face. I mean, I think the appropriate response would be clap off. Mr. Clapper, my goodness. Now, There was an update just a few hours later. Jamie Smith, the director of the Office of Public Affairs for the... Jamie Smith, director of the Office of Public Affairs for the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, quite possibly the longest job title in the history of all bureaucracy. Jamie said in a statement, quote, to clarify Director Clapper's point, in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood makes efforts that are largely secular in their orientation. He is well aware that the Muslim Brotherhood is not a secular organization. Okay. First of all, this statement was made back on February 10th, and Mr. Clapper still has a job. That should tell you right now that we're in deep trouble, ladies and gentlemen. The leadership of our government has been hijacked by neophyte morons or people who are genuinely dedicated to the destruction of Western civilization as you and I know it. And even if there's an election, I'm against that. Even if they won the election, I'm against that. All right. Now, can we try to get some good news out of the war file? I dig for you folks. Here you go. From Seoul, Korea. It's from WorldNet Daily. At dawn last Friday, South Korean special forces packed into a small boat approached a hijacked freighter in the Arabian Sea. Commandos scrambled up a ladder onto the ship, aboard which Somali pirates were armed with AK-47s and anti-tank missiles. A South Korean destroyer and a hovering Lynx helicopter provided covering fire. When the operation ended, 5 hours later, 21 hostages had been rescued, 8 Somali pirates killed, and 5 assailants captured. Way to go. That is from Lee Myung-bak, the president of South Korea. We want to thank him for putting a ray of sunshine into our lives during this current unpleasantness that we're all experiencing. All right. So that's it from the war file. Man, I tell you what, I don't know if I can take any more. I don't know if I can take any more of that. Let's move into the justice file. Not that the news is going to get any better from the justice file here in the United States. There's very few things more corrupt and threatening to America than Muslim extremists. But the lawyers and judges of our justice system are just that. They are a bigger threat. Their blindness and stupidity is on full display in this following story. From Richmond, Virginia. Now, this is an update on a story we did months ago. A Virginia inmate who warned officials he would kill again if not given the death penalty for murdering his cellmate has pleaded guilty to killing a second inmate. A Wise County, Virginia judge took Robert Gleason Jr.'s plea under advisement, but said he would not accept it until after Gleason undergoes a mental health evaluation. Gleason pled guilty to the July 28th murder of Aaron Cooper at the Red Onion State Prison, just like he said he would. He said, I want the death penalty and I want it now. If you don't give it to me, I will kill someone else. And the judges and lawyers said, gosh, he must be mentally ill. We should probably have him evaluated. Meanwhile, he strangled another guy in the next cell. Gleason is already facing the death penalty for the May 2009 murder of his other cellmate, Harvey Watson Jr. He's set to be sentenced in that case on February 22nd, but I'm sure this latest murder throws a monkey wrench into all that. Now the judges and lawyers won't know what to do. Well, he obviously needs to be evaluated. Unbelievable. That's the state of justice. Is it any wonder why the Muslims want to collapse Western civilization? It's getting pretty embarrassing. All right, from the Domestic Tranquility File... From Largo, Florida, prosecutors in Florida say a man on trial for killing his wife accidentally recorded the crime on her cell phone. That's right, 45-year-old Ronald Earl Williams somehow activated his cell phone, which then called his wife's cell phone. The phone's voicemail recorded Williams saying he was going to kill her, and then it recorded 31-year-old Mariama Williams' terrified screams immediately after, as he actually killed her. Prosecutors are seeking a first-degree murder conviction and the death penalty. Why? On the grounds that the crime was heinous, atrocious, and cruel. Now, there are a lot of other murders in Florida, where the prosecution does not seek the death penalty. But to me, have you ever heard of a murder that is not heinous, atrocious, and cruel? I mean, couldn't we all agree that murder in any form is heinous, atrocious, and cruel? Apparently, we can't agree on that. And maybe that's why the Muslims are going to step in and fill the vacuum. Because there's a vacuum of justice. There's no justice. Justice is perverted. It's a lie. It's a whore. All right. Now I'm getting a little bit upset. I'm going to calm down. Maybe. Maybe not. There's more from the domestic tranquility file. Sacramento, California, from the AP. Sacramento County District Attorney Jan Scully says Lalesh Kumar has received a life sentence without the possibility of parole, plus an additional 7 years and 4 months for hacking to death a woman and her three-year-old son with a meat cleaver. Apparently, Sacramento has a different view of what is heinous, atrocious, and cruel, because Lalesh Kumar is going to live out the rest of his days in relative comfort. He'll be educated, medicated, kept warm in the winter and cool in the summer for the rest of his natural life, plus 7 years and 4 months, just to be sure, for hacking to death a woman and her three-year-old son. Authorities say Kumar lived with his parents in Sacramento in an apartment below the victim, 33-year-old Virginia Pulido. Police arrived at Pulido's home to find the woman and her three-year-old child covered in blood, and Kumar wielding a meat cleaver. Both the victims died, but the prosecutors, the lawyers, and the judges out in California did not deem this particular murder particularly heinous, atrocious, or cruel, and therefore they did not pursue the death penalty, and Mr. Kumar will live. Makes me want to puke. More from the domestic tranquility file from West Valley, Utah. Police in Utah say a 10-year-old boy stabbed his mom in the back following a confrontation about household chores. The boy has been placed in the care of other family members. I'm sure they're pretty nervous. A Salt Lake County District Attorney will decide whether to prosecute the boy in juvenile court. The mother told the boy to do his chores. He stabbed her in the back. Okay, so she was just wounded. She didn't die. So I don't know if this qualifies as heinous or atrocious or cruel, but it's a 10-year-old boy stabbing his own mother in the back with a kitchen knife. That's the state of domestic tranquility in West Valley City, Utah. Let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, from CBS News there. Wow. Two men were parked in a car near the intersection of 2nd and Callow Hill Streets in Philadelphia, eating fast food when an argument broke out over French fries. The two men got out of the car, started fighting. One of them pulled a gun and shot the other man. The shooter fled in a silver Mercedes. There's no word on what started the argument over the fries. The argument, did I mention the argument was about French fries? And one of the men was shot. Yeah, that's the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. All right. And this is probably the most disturbing story of the month that I've seen. This next story, this is Julie Schenecker of Florida was arrested for shooting her children. She's been charged with two counts of first-degree murder. She claims she killed her 13-year-old son, Powers, Bo Schenecker, and 16-year-old daughter, Calix Powers Schenecker. She says she killed them because they were mouthy. So, the hearts of the mother have been turned away from the children. Now, I would posit a guess that this 13-year-old son and his 16-year-old sister, they were probably products of the public school at which their mother deposited them every day to be educated. And I'm sure they were mouthy. She shot them in the head multiple times, killing both of them because they were mouthy. But what's a liberal to do? You don't discipline your children. You don't train your children. And over the course of years and decades, the tension builds and builds and builds. And since mom is likely just another godless heathen out there, product of the public schools herself, how is she supposed to deal with the stress that builds up over the years and decades with her out-of-control, undisciplined children? She could never spank them. She was told that she should allow them to be creative and to follow their hearts, and it drove her insane, and eventually she shot and killed her own two children, for which she should be put to death. But this is a case study for anyone who cares to do the digging and look into the background. This is a textbook case on why there is a homeschooling movement exploding across America. A movement to discipline and train children, to raise them up in the fear and the admonition of the Lord, so that we don't drive each other crazy and it ends this way. It's just awful. It's just horrible. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. From Minot, North Dakota. Minot, North Dakota, I said. Four people were found dead in what investigators are calling related homicides at a home and a trailer in North Dakota, and a person of interest is being questioned. The North Dakota Attorney General's office said 15 homicides occurred in North Dakota in 2009, up from four in 2008, the lowest on record. The 2010 statistics are not yet available, but obviously they're climbing. We've got four people found dead near a home in North Dakota, the heartland of what was the greatest nation on God's green earth, and what is rapidly descending into chaos, madness. But don't worry. Listen to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck. Follow your heart. Always, always respect democracy and free markets, and everything will be okay. From New York City, an 81-year-old man and his wife were severely beaten during a robbery in the lobby of their apartment building. Joseph and Linda Naimo of Staten Island were attacked last Sunday night. Naimo's 75-year-old wife suffered a broken nose, broken jaw, and a fractured skull. The husband suffered cuts and bruises. He had celebrated his birthday earlier that same day. The husband is legally blind. The robbers got away with Naimo's wallet, which contained $18. Sorry, folks. I'm sorry to break it to you. But if you believe that free market economics and democracy are going to solve the problems of this world, you are a sucker and you are a fool. I'm sorry. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. I may never make it out of the Domestic Tranquility File without killing myself. That's just a figure of speech. I'm actually in a fairly good mood. But whenever I start reading these stories, I get physically and mentally, spiritually agitated, because I see a threat to my family and my children closing in as this madness is allowed to continue. And I'm not talking about the Muslims. I'm talking about the secular humanists, the judges, the lawyers, the politicians, the bureaucrats, the church, which is an embarrassment and should be ashamed of itself for the most part. Like I said, folks, the Christians have the answer, but there's darn few of them that have the answer. More from the domestic tranquility file. From St. Charles, Minnesota. It's from CBS Television. A masked intruder wanting money barged into 91-year-old Wally and 82-year-old Betty's apartment in St. Charles, Minnesota, over last weekend. After hearing all the commotion, the man's wife, the 82-year-old Betty, she went to the front of the house and found her husband on the floor. He'd been punched in the nose and was bleeding. She said, "I sat on the edge of the bed, and the man said, 'Give me your hands, I'm going to tie you up.' Well, 82-year-old Betty said, 'No, I don't think so.' And they both began to resist. Yeah, they resisted. After a couple of minutes of struggling with the 82-year-old and the 91-year-old, by the way, the 91-year-old Wally, he's a World War II veteran. After a couple minutes of struggling with the man, he ran out the door with nothing. Nothing. So, folks, this to me is a microcosm of where we are. We're under the threat of these heathens and these Muslims and these communists and these socialists. And they seem to outnumber us. It's like a young, strong man breaking into the house of an 81-year-old or a 92-year-old. And there doesn't seem to be much hope for the hapless victims. But if we put up a fight, ladies and gentlemen, if we put up a fight, we can win. Because their source of strength is a mile wide and an inch deep. But our source of strength, it goes all the way. All the way from the north to the south and the east to the west. It's the living God, the creator of the universe, his son Jesus Christ, who came and gave his very life to save us. So God cares. He wants us to win. The body of Christ should win. We shouldn't be afraid. We should stand up and resist. And we can win. You know, in North Dakota this week, a bill was introduced to recognize the humanity of the unborn child. I'm here to tell you, folks, that when we pass one of these bills, by the way, there's been bills introduced in a half a dozen states this year to stop this bloodshed, the systematic dehumanization and murder of an entire class of citizen, legally, under the color of law, butchering our own children. If we resist and we stand up and we fight this battle, I believe the other dominoes will fall. But we've got to be of good courage and don't shrink from the fight. Because it is the shedding of innocent blood that the adversary loves the most. Whether he's a Muslim or whether he's Bill Maher, that's what they love. They love defiling innocence and they love shedding innocent blood. And when we stop them legally, peacefully, but by forcefully standing up and saying this far and no further, that's when the tide will turn and the adversary will run and flee as if he's being pursued by 1,000 when there's only one of us. So don't be afraid. Oh, this story ends. This 82-year-old and 91-year-old, Wally and Betty, resisted the burglar and he ran out with nothing. The story ends, it says, despite the couple's bravery, police generally don't recommend being uncooperative with a criminal's demands because it's better to play it safe. That's the opinion of CBS, or probably the opinion of, I mean, most of the people in government. I mean, just lay back and enjoy the burglary. No, we fight, we resist. We will not go down without a fight. And folks, the Christian community has been supine for too long. I mean, I pointed out at the top of the broadcast, Jim Daly wants to have lunch with the head of Planned Parenthood, the largest butcherer of innocent people possibly in the history of the world. At least in the United States. Anyway, it's not time to take him to lunch. It's time to draw the battle lines, folks. It's time to resist and watch them flee. All right. Speaking of all that, let's go to the culture file. The anniversary of Roe versus Wade passed. I think since we've been on the air, I think it passed while we were off the air. And so I had this story pulled. this is from the Christian News Service. The pro-abortion rights Alan Guttmacher Institute reports that there have been nearly 50 million abortions performed since 1973. In 2008, Guttmacher says there were 1.2 million legally terminated pregnancies in the United States. Listen to this, folks. According to Guttmacher, 35% of all U.S. women will have had an abortion by the age of 45. That's more than a third of the women. Guttmacher also reports that 93% of all abortions occur for social reasons, such as a mother's decision that a child is unwanted or inconvenient. Black women are more than four times more likely than non-Hispanic white women to have an abortion, and Hispanic women are 2.7 times as likely as their white counterparts. 1,876 black pregnancies are terminated in the U.S. each day. And it doesn't matter whether you call them black, African-American, colored, or Negro, they are murdered every day. About 2,000 a day. The average amount paid for an abortion in 2009 was $413. Cash is preferred at Planned Parenthood. About 20% of women having an abortion reported using Medicaid to pay for it, despite laws that prohibit taxpayer dollars from going to fund abortions. We've told you on this broadcast from day one that the facade of no taxpayer funded abortion is one of the biggest lies ever perpetrated on the body politic in this country. One significant change that has occurred over the last decade, RU4086, the morning after pill. Guttmacher estimates that the use of the pill has risen significantly since 2005 and now accounts for 17% of all abortion procedures. And folks, you'll see declining abortion numbers over the next few years as surgical abortions indeed decline. But the chemical abortions will be taking their place. Unless we stand and fight and resist, unless we grab the enemy by their proverbial throat and throttle him and tell him no, no more. We will not allow this anymore. And in changing the heart of the nation about killing her children, perhaps, and just perhaps, we'll be able to prepare her for the fight against the other enemies who are a more distant and less immediate threat. But they are a threat that stands out there on the horizon. And a morally bankrupt and decadent nation, whether we have completely free markets and democracy or not, will not stand against an enemy who actually believes that God is important and that religion is important and that it is God's people who should inform the rulers of the world. In fact, they believe that it is Allah's people who should rule the world. By the way, I hate when talk show hosts, commentators, reporters, I hate it when they call Allah God. I hate that. He should be called Allah. He should not be called God because that's confusing. Do not confuse Allah with God. It doesn't matter to me that these ignorant, unwashed pagans think he's God. That's meaningless to me. And to condescend, to lower yourself to their level, to try to ameliorate their hatred of us by acknowledging Allah with the word God, to me, is shameful. And it's another indication of why they will win. Folks, the path we're on right now, they will win. It won't be next year. It won't be 5 years from now. But it will be in your grandchildren's lifetime. They will win. Your granddaughter will wear a burqa if you do not stop and stand and fight right now. How do you do it? Get your kids out of the public schools. Look to God, the living God, the true God. Look to Jesus Christ and then his book for guidance on how to raise the next generation. Shield your family from the influence of television and from the influence of the secular culture. Shield them from it. Protect them from that poison. Because you and I, we're too old and fat to fight this battle. It's our children that are going to have to fight this battle. My generation, my parents' generation, we both basically have abandoned the field of battle. And I'm ashamed to say it. But we can raise up the generation that will win. The generation that will bring the light of the Creator to the world and defeat the merchants of darkness. But I can tell you that at the rate we're going now, folks, you'll want to size your granddaughter up for a burqa. All right. Now, this is just I can't do this story. I can't do that story. Well, I'll do it. I don't know what's happened yet. I tried to find an update on this story. I haven't found it. Fort Lupton, Colorado. This is from the Associated Press. A pregnant Colorado woman, mistakenly given an abortion drug by a pharmacist, faces an excruciating wait to find out the fate of her unborn child. A pharmacist at a Safeway supermarket in Fort Lupton mistakenly gave Marina Silva the drug methotrexate earlier this month. The drug is used to terminate early-stage pregnancies. Silva is 6 weeks was 6 weeks pregnant at the time of this story. This story is already about 2 weeks old. Doctors say Silva could miscarry or have a baby with severe birth defects. You know, the fact that these drugs are even out. Now, methotrexate, it also has a legitimate use. It's used to somehow help people who are on chemotherapy. Anyway, it's just awful. I wonder if the doctors are now recommending she abort. Recommending now that she kill her baby. Because after all, it could be born with serious birth defects. And I know from experience that when there is the risk of birth defects, almost universally now, doctors, nurses, healthcare providers, they recommend abortion. Abort the kid. Kill the baby. It's going to be deformed. It's going to be sick. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be confused. It's going to be different. It's going to have a hard life. It's going to be difficult for you, Mom. Why don't you become a murderer and kill your child? Anyway, just a horrible story. All right. One from the Culture File. Dr. Kermit Gosnell appeared in court last Wednesday on his 70th birthday, along with his wife Pearl and 8 employees. The grand jury found the group operated a filthy, illegal abortion clinic that left 2 women dead and routinely killed late-term babies with scissors after they were born alive. This is from Philadelphia, the Associated Press. Gosnell, to show you the state of lawyers in America, Gosnell has secured a prominent Philadelphia criminal attorney, Jack McMahon, to defend him. Yeah, I mean, how do lawyers look at themselves in the mirror? I mean, this is just unbelievable. His lawyer said, "It's totally not fair for my client to be tried and convicted by everybody in this city, the paper, the radio, and the TV, when he hasn't had a single hearing on this." So, I mean, what chutzpah, what gall this lawyer has to stand up and defend. There's a grand jury investigation, folks. The cards are on the table. It's pretty obvious what this fella did. The state there in Pennsylvania, they say this is a potential death penalty case. Potential. Possibly it was heinous and brutal and cruel enough. Maybe. We'll have to look into that. Pennsylvania regulators, according to the AP, long ignored complaints of barbaric conditions at Gosnell's clinic, which catered to, of course, poor immigrant and minority women. In the city of brotherly love, the impoverished West Philadelphia section. You believe this guy can find a lawyer? Yes, I believe it. From Greenville, South Carolina, the Associated Press, Jessica Blackham went to the circus last Friday night with her sister and her family, but she left her four-year-old daughter at home. She says now she has no idea what happened after she entered the bathroom stall and gave birth and passed her placenta in a bathroom stall less than 3 feet across. She left the baby behind in the toilet for 90 minutes before a cleaning crew pushed open the door and found the infant. The baby has survived. The woman's mother claims that her daughter has amnesia, doesn't remember what happened. I've got more news. I'm just going to keep going here, folks. I'm going to go until I run out of news, and then that's going to be the end of the broadcast. Let's go into the culture file from Detroit. Detroit public schools apparently are in some trouble. In a monthly update by emergency financial manager Robert Bob, that was filed last Monday, they're planning to increase high school class sizes to 62. 62, because they're closing a bunch of schools there in Detroit. They're going to go from 142 schools in this particular district down to 72 schools starting in 2012. DPS considered but declined, but has declined to file for bankruptcy. They were encouraged to file for bankruptcy in 2009, but apparently decided not to do it. In the past year, debt in the district has increased by more than $100 million, brought on by a mix of revenue declines and property taxes, reduced state aid, declining enrollment, and an unplanned staffing surge this past fall. That's Barry Ho's stimulus hires. So they're having to hire more teachers, but less kids are coming to school. There's less tax money coming in. And as a result, well, nearly half the schools in Detroit could shut down. And what can you say? It's a step in the right direction, I suppose. But can you imagine being in a class of 62 people? For crying out loud, my boot camp platoon wasn't that big. Wow. One parent said that swelling high school classrooms to 60 or more students will only leave them uneducated. Well, so nothing will change. Things will be pretty much the same as they were, but there will be more kids in each classroom to brutalize one another. One more from the government school file from Silver Springs, Maryland. A Washington area teacher has been charged with choking and hitting students during the school day. Elementary school teacher Susan Burke was charged last Tuesday with 9 counts of second-degree assault. 9 of the 6 and 7-year-old students in her class reported that Burke choked, kicked, punched, scratched, and tightly squeezed their arms. Well, what's a secular humanist government school teacher to do? You can't spank the little monsters anymore. And while they may or may not deserve to be choked, and that's an open question, you can't discipline them. And if you can't discipline the kids and train the kids in a godly way, eventually you're going to snap and just grab them by the throat because they're going to drive you insane. I mean, I know some public school teachers, folks. This teacher likely cracked under the pressure of the worldview she's been told to operate within. Don't spank, don't criticize, let the kids be creative. Let them explore their creative potential, which includes probably kicking, punching, scratching, and beating on other kids. And maybe even this teacher. Anyway, another case study for why there is a massive homeschooling movement in the country, of which I am a proud member, and I encourage you to do the same. Because if you don't, I'm telling you, it's 1,000 years of darkness, okay? 1,000 years of darkness if you don't get your kids out of the public school. All right, let's see here. From the culture file, let's move to higher education, allegedly. A study of more than 2,300 undergraduates found that 45% of students show no significant improvement in the key measures of critical thinking, complex reasoning, and writing by the end of their sophomore years of college. Half did not take a single course requiring 20 pages of writing during their prior semester, and one-third did not take a single course requiring even 40 pages of reading per week. So the last 2 years of college appear to be just as detrimental as the first 2 years. I mean, in the first 2 years of college, I'm sure that youngsters are basically, they're either in remedial English and math, or they're in culturally sensitive studies programs. So their minds and spirits are pretty much destroyed, if not at least significantly distorted. And then during the last 2 years, they just get high and coast and look for women. And there's a study now that pretty much confirms all this. The findings are in a new book, Academically Adrift, Limited Learning on College Campuses, by two sociologists whose names I just don't even care about. The book is based on information from 24 schools that provided what are called collegiate learning assessment data. The schools took part on the condition that their institutions not be identified. Well, that's got to tell you something right there. I mean, you go into the college administration, you say, we want to do a big study and really dig down into what's happening here in the education of America's youth. And the administration says, okay, well, we'll let you dig and ask questions, but please don't tell anybody that you heard this here. I mean, I might have tenure, but this could really be a problem. The collegiate learning assessment has its share of critics who say it doesn't capture learning in specialized majors, or it isn't a reliable measure of college performance because so many factors are beyond their control. You know, like, there's so many other measures of performance that you don't take into consideration, like tolerance and management of venereal diseases, and music appreciation. I mean, there's just an awful lot that these studies don't capture. So focused on reading and writing and comprehension and critical thinking. What about proper use of prophylactics? All right. So that's college for you. All right. From the Culture File, this is from the Daily Mail over in London. A survey has revealed that children are often happier with their online lives than they are with reality. They say they can be exactly who they want to be. And as soon as something is no longer fun, they can simply hit the quit button. 1 in 8 young people is in contact with strangers when on the web and often lie about their appearance, age, and background. So another survey now reveals what we've all been observing happening with the little public school monsters in our neighborhoods as they basically just, it's a lucifuge. A lucifuge. Look it up. It's becoming more and more obsessed with oneself and less interested in anything outside of oneself. And eventually it becomes complete because, folks, God knew that fallen man had an infinite capacity. Because, folks, God knew that fallen man had an infinite capacity for selfishness and self-indulgence. And that's why he gave us his word and his law and ultimately his son. Now, secular humanism has given us what will no doubt be looked upon, in my opinion, as the most narcissistic generation in memory, perhaps in all of human history. The technology is wonderful. The technology is valuable and useful. But without the moral underpinnings of a relationship and a respect for God and right and righteousness, an entire generation is devolving into total and utter self-indulgence and leading, in my opinion, to the ultimate demise of Western civilization.
Those boys are evil. The crazy shenanigans cause me all kinds of distress. Those boys are evil. Sing it with me. E-V-I-L-B-O-I-S. I know you think the saints, but mom, I'm here to tell the B-O-I-S, they're just evil.
crazy. I have those balls of evil. They're making me feel like my head's in a hydraulic press. And that don't feel too good. Those balls are evil. Everybody, E-V-I-L-B-O-I-S. That's what I'm talking about.
One of the lessons I've taught my daughters from the time they were old enough to comprehend English is I've told them boys are bad. Be suspicious. Boys are bad. All right. And mostly because, you know, all throughout our neighborhood are a bunch of government-educated monsters who, well, let's just say they're a threat. And I want my girls to be prepared. I tell them, boys will lie to you, and they are bad. Don't believe anything they say. Check it out with Dad. He's the only boy you can trust. All right. Now, more from the Culture File. An Idaho State University sociologist says true modern acolytes of Dracula are out there seeking consensual blood-sharing relationships. I said blood-sharing relationships. Vampire chic has exploded in recent years with the best-selling Twilight series of novels and movie adaptations. Well, this sociologist says, self-identified vampires seek significant others with an abundance of energy willing to allow them to suck blood from a small incision made high up on the chest by a scalpel. So this is from the ridiculous to the confoundingly terrifying, in that we've got one segment of our youth population that's obsessed with World of Warcraft, and they'd rather live in a virtual world. And the ones who do want to meet other people want to suck their blood. I mean, tell me this doesn't bode poorly for the future of our society, folks.
It's like Scientology, right?
Scientology, huh?
You're crazy too.
Yeah, Scientologists. Scientology has been legitimized, and it's basically I think it's like a financial Ponzi scheme. I don't think they suck each other's blood, though. I mean, that may be financially, but this is just whacked out. And now listen to this. The arrangement, this blood-sucking arrangement, is apparently legal because it is struck between two consenting adults. I find this ironic in that two consenting adults can agree to suck each other's blood, but if two consenting adults make an employment agreement for less than minimum wage, somebody's going to jail. It's just bizarre to me. I don't understand the machinations of our modern secular society. I'm sorry, I just don't get it. Okay, now, a vote has been delayed. At the city council in Berkeley, California, they've set it aside, but they are going to take it up again. Listen to this. The city council was poised to vote last week to set aside $20,000 annually for city workers' gender reassignment surgery. That's right. The city council of Berkeley wanted to set aside enough money for one sex change per year within the bureaucracy of Berkeley. First of all, on its face, one per year in Berkeley? Come on. $20,000 is not enough to facilitate the number of sex change operations going on within the bureaucracy of Berkeley. So I would say just on a financial level, this is bad planning. Now, the benefit, according to the council, would allow employees to collect the money before their sex change operation. To receive payout, employees would have to have lived as the opposite sex for at least 1 year and undergone hormone therapy. They would also have to have worked for the city for at least a year while undergoing this transformation. The city would then dole out $20,000 on a first-come, first-served basis, and the money would not accrue from year to year. So if nobody got a sex change operation, the city council would just keep the $20,000 and roll it over for next year. What are the odds that not a single bureaucrat in Berkeley goes for a sex change in any given year? The surgery costs apparently range of this what they call sex reassignment surgery, also most commonly called genital mutilation and poisoning by hormones. The cost of such surgery of this transformation range from $7,000 and could go up to more than $50,000. The city initially asked its two health insurance providers to include sex change surgery in their coverage, but Kaiser Permanente and Health Net said, "Are you out of your cotton-picking minds?" No. That's insanity. What are you people from Berkeley? Anyway, so the insurance companies, they haven't lost their mind. City Councilman Gordon Wozniak said $20,000, it's not a lot of money to set aside for something that's rarely going to happen. Now, Berkeley, the city of Berkeley, has about 1,500 employees, and a few have recently inquired about sex reassignment surgery, oddly enough. Build it and they will come. Another citizen and former zoning commissioner gave in his two cents, her two cents. She said, quote, "There might be some people who really need this, but right now my street badly needs paving." That's Berkeley for you. You got potholes in front of my house. I mean, I respect the decision of someone to fundamentally transform themselves into a beautiful butterfly, but I got these potholes. Anyway, not surprisingly, San Francisco started offering the benefit back in 2001. City Councilman Max Anderson says, quote, "We're later than San Francisco, but we still try to be on the forefront of policies to promote people's understanding of same-sex issues. It's okay if it's controversial. We're willing to push the envelope a little bit." That's City Councilman Max Anderson. Okay, Max, first of all, this isn't a same-sex issue. By definition, these people want sex change operations. So it seems to me this is an opposite sex issue. But anyway, no need to fret, ladies and gentlemen. The vote has been delayed so the council can study the issue further and get feedback from their citizens before they schedule this vote. But the vote will occur, and I'm sure we'll cover it. Here at the Weekly Worldview, they're saying they're going to take it up sometime in the first quarter, which I believe ends in March. So we'll just see about that. All right, from the Bad Religion file, Joel Osteen is defending his position that homosexuality is a sin. He said that on Piers Morgan tonight. He said that even for the talented Elton John, he said being gay isn't, quote, God's best for a person's life. Being gay is not God's best. It's not God's best. So that's the closest Joel Osteen has ever come to actually quoting the Bible. He's never gotten closer. He says being gay isn't God's best for your life. He says, "I've always believed, Piers, that the scripture shows it's a sin. But I'm not one of those who are out there to bash homosexuals and tell them that they're terrible people and all that. There are other sins in the Bible, too." Really, Joel? I'm surprised that you'd be aware of anything that's in the Bible. But anyway, did you hear this week that Elton John is telling Billy Joel that he needs rehab? So, you know, a memo to Billy Joel. If Elton John is telling you that you got problems, man, you got to be really screwed up. You should probably check into a serious rehabilitation clinic, man. But back to Joel Osteen. He says, quote, "My message is about lifting people up. I really only talk about homosexuality in these interviews. I've never mentioned it at church." In fact, the reporter here, which is from the Houston Chronicle, says Osteen has never preached a sermon on homosexuality at Lakewood Church here in Houston, but a number of his 44,000 attendees are homosexuals. Okay. That's the Bad Religion file, of which Joel Osteen is a poster boy. So he's willing to tell Elton John that it's not the best, but he's not willing to tell Elton that it's destructive and that it's corrosive to the society and that it's damaging to his eternal soul, that he's in rebellion against his creator, the living God, who will be the ultimate judge. of the destination of Mr. Elton John's eternal soul. And so Joel Osteen has missed an opportunity to at least tell Elton John the truth and even tell Piers Morgan, who I'm sure Piers Morgan needs to hear some biblical truth. But as usual, Joel Osteen, call to duty, is AWOL and misses the whole point. All right, now, from the culture file, gay rights groups have been blasting Chick-fil-A. Yeah, Chick-fil-A, for donating food to an anti-gay marriage group. Yeah. Now, Lake Lambert, who's an author of a book called Spirituality, Inc., he says the flap may be a sign of more turbulence ahead for Chick-fil-A as it attempts to hold on to its conservative Christian business culture while expanding its chain beyond the Bible Belt. So who is Lake Lambert? I hope I get to it here in the article. Lambert says Chick-fil-A is trying to foster a specifically Christian identity. And if there's one thing that the fags and the creeps and the Muslims and the secular humanists will not tolerate, it's anyone who would dare try to foster a specifically Christian identity. So the war is on against Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A president Dan Cathy defended his company in a Facebook video and in a written statement. He said, quote, "In recent weeks, we've been accused of being anti-gay. Well, we have no agenda against anyone. While my family and I believe in the biblical definition of marriage, we love and respect anyone who disagrees with us." So there, Chick-fil-A already, the first shot of the battle, and Chick-fil-A is already conceding ground. It's sad to see, folks. The gestures, this statement from the president of the company, the article says these gestures have not mollified the chain's critic. What a shock. When you try to be open and friendly with the your enemy who wants to orchestrate your ultimate demise, it doesn't work. They don't like you. So the president of Chick-fil-A should have stood up and he should have said, "God said one man and one woman, and I'm going to stand by that. The rest of you, you can go to hell for all I care if that's what you want. I'm going to stake my claim with God, who says it's one man, it's one woman. And by the way, we make an awesome chicken sandwich. Come on in and eat." But no, he wants to mollify his critics. Well, guess what? They will not be mollified until Chick-fil-A has hired in there at the executive level open flaming homosexuals. That's when Chick-fil-A has been openly sodomized, that's when the fags will be mollified, and not one inch sooner. This guy shouldn't give an inch of ground. It's sad to see. Let's see. Chick-fil-A, if you read their founding documents, their corporate purpose says this: "Our corporate purpose is to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that he entrusts to us." That's in their founding document of their founder, who has now passed away. And the family has taken over. Chick-fil-A also closes restaurants on Sundays to give their workers a chance to go to church. By the way, Sunday is one of the most busy days for restaurants, and Chick-fil-A closes. Employees are encouraged to attend prayer services. Well, we can't. The fags will not stand for this. Anyway, faggots and freaks all over the country, according to this article, say that as the chain continues to grow, they may find it more difficult to avoid the culture war. Well, you know what, Chick-fil-A? You have a unique opportunity to actually stand up and be involved in the culture war. Don't compromise with these people. I mean, it's like offering an olive branch to the Muslim when he's got the scimitar to your throat. I mean, it's time to pull a gun. For crying out loud. All right. Now, we're almost done here. How long have we gone on? My goodness, this has gone on for just an excruciating amount of time. I hope you're all okay with this, folks, but we're almost done here. This is from Lifetime.com. I'm sorry. I can't read anymore. LimeLife.com. I have no idea. It's some entertainment site. Miley Cyrus has been voted the worst influence on American youth in 2010. So it's an AOL website. It's named Miley Cyrus, the worst celebrity influence for the second year in a row. Why did I do this story? I don't know. Do I care? Yes, I do, folks. And here's why. Because Miley Cyrus has more of an influence on the young women of America than all the laws and all the congressmen and all the presidents and the governors and all the pastors in the country. Miley Cyrus has more of an influence. And she's smoking dope and stripping on videos, and it's just disgusting. And I think she should be arrested, frankly. She should be thrown in jail with, who's that slut I mentioned at the top? Oh, Lindsay Lohan. She should be thrown in jail with Lindsay Lohan. Probably not in the same cell. Probably be a bad influence on each other. All right, this is it. I can't do this anymore. This is from the Reuters Wire. A Canadian woman has become the first person in the world to graduate with a master's degree in Beatles study. And we're not talking about entomology, ladies and gentlemen, the study of bugs, which is honest work, if you can get it. We're talking about the Beatles, the 1960s pop group. She's graduated with a master's degree in Beatles studies. Former Miss Canada finalist Mary Lou Zahalan Kennedy was one of the first of 12 students to sign up for the Liverpool Hope University course on the Beatles when it began in 2009, and she is now the first to graduate. The founder and leader of the Beatles Master of Arts program at Liverpool Hope University said the postgraduate degree makes Zahalan Kennedy a member of a select group of popular music experts. She says this student has now joined an internationally recognized group of scholars of popular music studies who are able to offer fresh and thought-provoking insights into the discipline of musicology. All right. So anyway, that's it. That's the broadcast. I hope you've enjoyed. I know it's been long. I want to thank all my friends who keep us on the air. Personhood USA, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, Theology Online. And of course, my other brother, Darrell, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. My name is Doug McBurney. And by God's grace, I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.